So I'm here representing a collaboration between Massachusetts General Hospital Division of Global Health and Human Rights and the Harvard College Global Hunger Initiative called the Initiative to End Childhood Malnutrition. And I'm going to talk a little bit about our work in rural southwestern Uganda. I have nothing to disclose. Nothing at all. Protein energy malnutrition affects 25% of the world's pediatric population and plays a role in more than half of the 11 million deaths each year of children less than 5 years of age. Unfortunately, malnutrition is often overlooked. When severe malnutrition is identified, healthcare workers are untrained, unmotivated, and lack resources. Sadly, the median case fatality for marasmus is 20 to 30%. And has remained unchanged for 50 years. Located in southwest Uganda, Nitchabali Hospital serves Rukungiri's district population of 300,000 persons, 60% of whom are less than 18 years of age, 80% of the population are subsistence farmers, and 34% lack clean water. For every 18,000 people, there's only one medical doctor. 30% of the children in Rukungiri suffer from some form of malnutrition. The 1997 Local Government Act, more than 10 years ago, decentralized child-focused planning, giving district governments jurisdiction over children's services in Uganda. However, no resources are currently available in Rukungiri to address malnutrition. Nitchabali Hospital is a nonprofit, non-governmental Catholic district hospital that serves the entire population of Rukungiri. There are more than 300 beds and only 4 non-residency trained physicians for the entire hospital. A doctor rounds on the pediatrics ward once a week, and nurses carry out the admission plan, tweak treatment, and discharge when they think the child is ready to go home. Multiple studies suggest that well-trained staff and protocol-driven care for children with severe malnutrition improve outcome and prevent death. Well-conducted literature not only links malnutrition to significant pediatric morbidity and mortality, but also to decreased productivity, per-person income, economic growth, and productivity in the longer term. In September 2009, a clinical assessment uncovered that a large number of inpatients had undetected and complicating malnutrition. In response, a comprehensive and locally adapted protocol for the treatment of severe malnutrition and related conditions was created based on World Health Organization recommendations and national guidelines. Despite my well-intentioned efforts, the protocols got completely tossed aside. There was too much to do, and as usual, nutrition seemed to be the least of their immediate problems when children were dying every 20 seconds of malaria. So a collaboration between undergraduates from the Harvard College Global Hunger Initiative and Massachusetts General Hospital Division of Global Health and Human Rights was formed, creating the Initiative to End Childhood Malnutrition, or IECM. And so in a case study type of approach, I'm going to describe our ongoing initiative within a rural Ugandan district to create an affordable and locally sustainable model to identify and systematically treat malnutrition. The key to sustainability is local support. An upfront partnership with the hospital administration delineated roles and gave ownerships and responsibilities. Top-down support proved important not only for staff motivation, but also for equipment and medication supply chain. Administrators acted as a liaison to governmental district health officials. We created documents of intent to address malnutrition both within the hospital and the larger district community. Quarterly reports and meetings documented progress and gave opportunity to an ongoing dialogue and to access to the community through the Ministry of Health, through sponsored programs such as immunizations and HIV initiatives. Here in this picture, a healthcare provider rounds with our 50-page locally adapted protocol created to treat severe malnutrition for inpatients. This approach is much more than just nutritional therapy. The physiology of malnourished children often requires different treatment for ordinary medical conditions. The protocol specifically outlines admission and discharge criteria and concretely describes evidence-based treatment for micronutrient deficiencies, dehydration, diarrhea, infections such as malaria, pneumonia, tuberculosis, and HIV, seizures, anemia, hypo and hyperthermia, hypoglycemia, eye problems, meningitis, and heart failure. Additionally, outpatient follow-up and the outpatient treatment for mild and moderate malnutrition as outlined. Curricula with formal certification was developed by 3 Harvard undergraduates based on the protocol, and hospital-wide staff training ensued. The trainings ranged from 5 to 8 1.5-hour sessions, depending on provider type, with subsequent observation of competency. 98% of hospital staff were trained, and 100% of the routine staff were given a refresher course 6 months post-certification. Part of the pediatrics ward was designated as a physical malnutrition ward. An unused washroom was transformed into a nutritional education center and therapeutic food preparation room. Supplies and medications were obtained and organized, and program compliance checks and balances were put into place via inventory checklist, records, books, and systematic reviews. A hospital clinical officer paired with 1 business-minded undergraduate student performed a comprehensive financial forecasting of the program. The initial assessment of cost was $7 per patient hospital stay. A baseline community assessment of food insecurity factors were performed in 3 randomly chosen communities. While food insecurity was rather high throughout, education appeared to be an important barrier in the malnourished population. High-risk health centers were identified by both district health officials and through known demographics of malnourished inpatients. A health curriculum was designed to teach malnutrition screening using MUAC bracelets, World Health Organization standard deviation charts, and weight for height diagnostic criteria. Patients with severe malnutrition were referred to Nechibali Hospital, and patients with mild or moderate malnutrition were monitored closely by the health centers and pictorial handouts that were used to educate the mothers. Training sessions were facilitated by hospital nurses and nursing students, and were accompanied by village parental education sessions. Refresher courses reinforced a continued presence of the program within the community and address any turnover of staff or program changes. What particularly makes this model innovative, especially for reproducibility, are the sustainability aspects, which include local governments, education, and finances. From the start, an executive board of 5 dedicated hospital provider representatives was established as a local governing body for all activities. These were peer nominated volunteers and represented each clinical aspect of the hospital. A hospital administration approved charter was created, delineating roles within the board and paying particular attention to role interdependencies, checks and balances, and frequent reassessments with modification of policies to reflect need. Monthly reports and responsibilities are extensive, but driven by support from local health authorities, hospital administration and staff, and the local community. At the monthly board meeting, a financial status report, assessment of inpatient program, health center statistics, summary of barriers and problems with proposed solutions and interventions, and short and long-term goals of the programs are reviewed. Each executive board member is trained and responsible for teaching the curriculum to new hospital employees within their respective divisions of the hospital. Undergraduate students, in partnership with local nursing students and nurses, maintain the health center curriculum, ultimately as part of the School of Nursing community outreach. Because nurses provide much of the care within rural Africa, a nursing school curriculum is being developed and piloted at Nechibali's school. Competency outcomes will be measured, and with the ultimate goal to formally integrate this into the National Nursing School curriculum. So I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about an example of a road bump in this whole process. About 2 months into the whole program in March, there was a huge drop in caseload. And the executive board, Pete's ward representative, noticed that there was a premature discharge because patients couldn't afford the cost of hospital stay. And the executive board director of community outreach inquired at the health center level and confirmed that there was a refusal to seek inpatient care due to prohibitive costs. The executive board financial director reviewed all inpatient charts, and total hospital bill per patient stay was greater than 3 times the forecasted prediction at about $30 a patient per hospital stay. And so the executive board sat together and brainstormed and yielded two conclusions. One was that the cost per patient stay had to decrease to $10 in order to overcome financial barrier to care. This is what represents weekly income for a family of this region, and also about the 50% the price of a cost of one goat. Alternative methods to financial support for this program needed to be explored because someone had to pay for this. And so after a solid financial plan was adopted, the hospital administration supported a maximum flat fee charge per patient stay of $10. So this gives you an idea of the distribution of patient costs for this program. What was largely left out of the initial forecasting were all of the sundries, such as IV tubing, needles, and gauze, related to giving medications, hospital fees and maintenance fees, like cleaning the bed and cleaning the floors, and provider fees. And if a flat fee were to go into place, the hospital would somehow had to come up with $615 a month to keep the patients coming in. So multiple successful microenterprise programs in the developing world were examined, and proposals to internally finance the malnutrition program were evaluated. The executive board, with the support of the administration, settled on taking over the hospital canteen, which is basically an on-campus convenience store that sells basic food and non-food items to patients, patients' families, employees, and students. They knew that the previous canteen monthly revenue was $923, and the plan was 80% of the net income would go directly to supplementing the malnutrition program, while 20% of the net income would go to the canteen maintenance. This would leave a little extra money to fund an accomplishment-based monetary incentive for this volunteer executive board that had been working so hard. A brief transition time to self-sufficiency during the installation of this program would be funded by private donors. And so up until this point, U.S. personnel were working on a volunteer basis, supplies were being donated by private individuals, and small personal grants were used to support outreach efforts. The actual cost of care was being footed by the families. However, a malnutrition treatment model where startup costs were supported by an outside source briefly until a program became financially self-sufficient was not yet previously described in the literature. Based on a model of cost effectiveness and analysis done in Peru, we did a comprehensive cost analysis of our program. Donated materials and activities were costed at fair market value. All volunteer time was costed at their income worth, and included costs were separated by allocation to avoid redundancy. After comprehensive calculation, when you look at our 8-month startup costs, you note that the largest cost is actually our U.S. volunteer cost. This highlights how maybe a brief period of humanitarian or grant aid or volunteer time really inflates the cost of a program. And interestingly, non-volunteer time costs account for only 4% of the total program costs. So actually, if you look at numbers, the patient hospitalization costs over 8 months was $2,600. The total program startup costs were $110,000, and much of this was made up by the volunteer time that was counted as if it was a U.S. salary. And total program cost without volunteer time for the startup cost was $16,000. Projected program cost to date is once the program is expected to be self-sufficient, which is in January 2011, is $20,000, with the volunteer time $113,000. But when you think about $20,000, this is really just peanuts. And also looking at the preliminary outcomes of the actual program itself, we certified 106 health workers, treated 104 inpatients, of which 75% were referred by our trained health centers, and 90% came from health center-trained communities. As a result of the program, there has been a 1.3-time increase in identified cases and an astounding drop in mortality from 4.4 to 1.9%. Furthermore, there have been many secondary patient benefits from this program, such as the treatment of comorbidities. So this pilot to model a locally and financially sustainable malnutrition program appears to be feasible with a relatively low startup cost. Key features of its innovation include local governance with local ownership, continuing education, and goal towards financial self-sufficiency. And future plans looking to January 2011 include development and integration into the National Nursing School curriculum, a formal cost analysis and cost effectiveness assessment of the program, with ultimate plans for reproducibility at other sites. And so this is a patient, little Ronnie, who we picked up in a village when we were out doing outreach. And this is him during his treatment. And this is him on discharge and then 6 months later. Thanks.
We'd like to have two questions right now, right after this presentation, and then we go to the next presentation. Anybody have a question?
Yeah, I'm Ilo Senga, I'm from Uganda, Faculty of Agriculture and Labor in the 14th District. And I think one of the challenges, I don't know which target maybe sub-counties you went to, because most sub-counties that are near Rajivari Hospital, they are like food safety workers, so I don't know targeted the challenge of food and cooking demonstrations, especially for mothers, because I feel that should be a really important area, because they have food, they have milk, they have most of the things, that part of the overall community district. So I don't know
if I'm sorry, I just didn't hear. If I targeted which part?
The part of Rukundiri.
The actual location? Yeah, so we asked the local health officers and also the villages where they thought the most malnutrition was. And we also went back and looked through all of our records of hospital inpatients. And we started, because there are actually 65 health centers in the district, we started with the training of the most effective affected communities. And particularly went there. And I can kind of, well, I'm not sure if I can go back, but we actually wanted to figure out if this was a lack of food or a lack of education. And it's actually a lack of both. So even though they have peanuts there in some of the poor districts, there's a lack of education to the point where they're feeding their kids only potatoes and not actually a well-balanced diet. And so a big part of the outreach that we're doing is actual local maternal education. And a lot of these parents can't read either in Riankari or in English, and so it's actually done in pictorial diagrams, and the health centers are trained to explain, and we actually go into the communities and explain to the mothers how to give a well-balanced diet to their children using the locally available foods. Carla?
Yeah, very nice presentation. Thank you. And maybe you covered this and I missed it, but I'm wondering what the breastfeeding patterns are in terms of how what percentage and, you know, for how long do women breastfeed exclusively as a way to decrease malnutrition?
Yeah, so actually breastfeeding is really, really well done in this district. Most people will breastfeed up to 9 months of age, if not up to 2 years of age. And longer. So that's actually was never, there's not a lot of stigma attached to it here, which is something I faced in other places. So that is kind of one benefit. Unfortunately, when kids start weaning, that's when we start seeing them come in with malnutrition.